Okay, good morning everyone. It's Parsha Shoftim this week. Action-packed Parsha, as always. So, just let me begin with a little bit of an overview, not going through everything, but just some highlights of the Parsha. Beginning of the Parsha, we have lots of halachas to do with the Sanhedrin, and which really is connected with a lot of foundations of the way halacha works, and the way the whole structure of Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh, the written Torah, the oral Torah, and so on, including one of the mitzvahs called the Isra, the prohibition of a Zokin Mamre. Zokin Mamre means a Talmud Chacham that goes against the Sanhedrin, the ultimate system in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, at least in olden times, was there was a central Sanhedrin, like a Supreme Court, and once they decided, and once they paskin on something, it was prohibited to go against them. One of the mitzvahs in this week's parasha, which we're actually going to go into a little bit later, is that the mitzvah of Minui Melech, to appoint a king, but we'll come back to that. We also have the laws of Levim, how the Levites, the Levim, didn't actually have a portion of the land of Eretz Yisrael. One of the sections of this week's parasha is also the Nevuah, the concept of prophecy, which is one of the 13 principles of faith, actually. It's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. And that's a lot about in this week's parasha, about the obligation to listen to a Novi. Once someone is an established Novi, an established prophet, becomes obligatory to listen to what he says, or she says. There was Nevi'im and Nevi'ois. There's Ore Miklat, the cities of refuge, as discussed in this week's parasha. We have also an interesting mitzvah of Edim Zoymimin. Edim Zoymimin is an interesting structure. You know, according to the Torah, things are established through two witnesses. So how about if two witnesses come and say that a certain person stole, or a certain person is guilty of something, and there's a certain punishment or consequence that comes with that. And they convict the person on the testimony of those two witnesses, and then another two witnesses come and say that actually you're not telling the truth because you were with us at that time, and it's credible evidence. Then there's a concept in the Torah called Edim Zomin, that the two witnesses that wanted to convict the innocent victim have to have the same punishment that they wanted to inflict on those two people. Interesting structure. Towards the end of the parasha, we have the laws of warfare, about how Yidden have to go to war, what is said to them, the talk that's given to them by the Kohanim before they go, and so on and so forth. Also, at the very end of the parasha, we have the din of Eglah Arufa, about what happens if someone is found murdered next to a city. No one can find the murderer. There's a certain atonement sacrifice that the nearest city has to bring to atone for the fact that perhaps there was negligence involved in terms of not giving the visitor enough protection, and so on and so forth. Okay. So what I want to do is, before we go into the main part of today's parasha, I want to just touch on something at the beginning of the parasha. In the spirit of something we've discussed, that everything that happens in Elul is connected with Elul, therefore I want to begin just with the connection of this parasha to Elul. It's a connection generally in the way we serve Hashem, but with a particular relevance to Elul. And it's the first pasuk of the parasha, which I'm going to actually just share. Give me one second here. There we are. So the very first part of the parasha is about appointing judges, and the number one of there the chumash says shoftim v'shoytrim titein l'chol b'chol she'arecha. You shall place judges, magistrates, and officers in all your gates. Gates over here is reference to the gates of your cities. In other words, every city has to have a system of justice, has to have judges, a beis din, has to have people who enforce the law. All of your gates, Asher Hashem Elokecha Noisa L'chol Yishvatecha, that Hashem is giving to the tribes that are going into Israel. V'shoftu Esa'om Mishpat Tzedek, and you shall judge the people a proper justice, a just justice system, in other words. Now, the Mefarshim all talk about this, and all talk about how this is connected to our own way we serve Hashem. And many Mefarshim also connect this to the idea of Elul, because Elul is a time, of course, to reflect, a time to make a cheshbon, and it's a time to reflect and to contemplate the effectiveness of our own personal judges and officers. What does that mean? So, first of all, I want to share with you a couple of things that the Me'ah Shiloyach, the Ishbitzer, says. He says a very interesting thing. He says, you know, the first mitzvah of this week's parasha, Shoftim v'Shoytrim, to appoint judges, comes right after last week's parasha. The end of last week's parasha is the festivals, the Yom Tovim. And over there, one of the mitzvahs that is brought up, one of the mitzvahs that it talks about in the Chumash, is the concept of simcha, of joy, happiness. And we have the famous pasuk in last week's parasha that says, V'somachto b'chagecha. You shall be happy, you shall rejoice in your festivals. Now we know that simcha is a tremendous thing. To be open, to be confident, to be celebrate, to be besimcha, to have joy is an amazing thing. We talk about ivdu es Hashem besimcha, we're going to serve Hashem with joy and so on and so forth. But he says, you know what, that when there's joy and there's simcha, we also need to take caution, we have to be careful. Because what happens is that when a person is very upbeat and very besimcha, there's a kind of looseness. This is a concept that's talked about in Kabbalah as well. There's a kind of looseness that the person is in, and that looseness actually could bring to negative joy. It could bring to frivolity. It could bring to inappropriate behavior. And he brings a very fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says, it's a Gemara in Brachas, the Gemara says that Rab Chelba said that when a person comes out of shul, he shouldn't run, he shouldn't take a huge step. And then on that comment, the Gemara continues and says, Abaya, one of the great Talmudic sages, said that is only when you come out of shul, but when you're going to shul, you can run. You should run. And the Ishbitz explains, this is the idea. When a person is running, he's strong, he's confident, he's determined. Determination, strength, openness, joy are all very, very good things. But if it's not checked, if it's not guided, if it's not channeled, if it's not focused, it could land up really bad. It could land up really being destructive. And therefore the Gemara is saying, when you go out of shul, when you're not focused, this is an interesting interpretation. He says, when you're going out of shul, which means you don't have the focus so much on shul, you don't have the focus on holiness, you don't have the focus so much on serving Hashem, then you have to be careful. Don't take a big step. Don't run. But when you are running, when you're going to shul, if you're focused, if you're going towards a purpose, if you know your goal, if you're reflecting on your goal, then on the contrary, you can run as much as you want. You should run. Says the Israelites, the same sort of thing here. Last week the Torah talks about simcha, va'isa ach sameach. Now we know being the simcha, as we said, is an incredibly important thing, but when a person is experiencing joy and celebration and openness and determination and confidence and optimism, shoftim v'shoytrim, you need to put the officers and the judges just to make sure that your joy is focused, just to make sure that your joy, your celebration is actually in the right direction and that it's bringing you closer to Hashem and not, God forbid, further from Hashem. And in another piece, the Ishbitz also continues and he says that this idea of shoftim v'shoytrim, this idea of appointing judges refers to the city. A human being is called in many svarim called an ir katano, a small city, right? The person is a country, the person is a city, and therefore we need to place judges at different parts of our body to make sure that we're doing the right thing. And he says, what does it mean to doing the right thing? That part of what we need to think about, and I guess this is part of the cheshbon, the reflection that we think about during Elul, is that the Torah is structured into two parts. And that is the things that we can do and the things that we shouldn't do. And they're intertwined. So for example, in Yiddishkeit, we know that the end doesn't justify the mean. Meaning? So he gives a couple of examples. He says, Hashem gives us a mitzvah, is coming up not such a long time. The mitzvah of Sukkot, the mitzvah to take an esrog, to take a lulav and an esrog. So the pasuk says there, ulakachtem lochem, you shall take for you. Kachtem, you shall pick up, you shall take. But of course, when you take something, the Torah warns us, make sure it's not stolen. Make sure it's with permission. It's what you were supposed to do. And so on and so forth. So that's part of the cheshba, knowing to put different checkpoints, so to speak. To reflect and to think and to put self-control, law enforcement officers in our own being to make sure that we're doing the right thing and that we're keeping out those things that are not right. And more specifically, in another piece, the Ishbitzer says that many Mefarshim say. And that is saying that when the Torah says to place judges, the Chol She'arecha, at all your gates, it's a reference to the gates of a person. And different Mefarshim explain this differently, but the way he explains it and the way it's explained in many places is that the gates are the seven gates. He said there's seven gates to the person, the two eyes, the two ears, the two nostrils, and the mouth. Those are the gates. What does that mean? Those are the entry points of the body that are the connection between us and the outside world. It's how we respond to the outside world. It's how we absorb the outside world into us. So what does that mean? The two eyes, of course, is about what we see. What we see affects us. Not only what we see, but how we interpret what we see. How we look at something, positively, negatively, and so on and so forth. So that's part of the judges, the officers, have to be at our eyes, making sure that we're watching what we see, watching what we look at, and what we do look at, we're watching that we absorb it properly, internalize it properly. The ears, of course, is how we listen, how we interpret what we hear. Listening to gossip, listening to negativity, listening to things we shouldn't listen to, and so on. The mouth, of course, is what we say. Is what we say hurtful? Is what we say kind? Is what we say positive? What we say negative? Is it lashon hara? Is it constructive? And so on and so forth. And even the nostrils, what does the nostrils refer to? So in many Sefarim, it says the nostrils is the entry point into the brain, and it's a symbol of thought. That even our thoughts, which come from how we interpret the outside world, which come from how we respond to what is happening outside of us, also needs officers and needs legislators to gauge and to measure and to regulate our mindset, our messages in our brain, how we interpret things around us, and so on and so forth. So that's the concept, and many of the Mefarshim, many of the Sifrei Musa, the books on ethics and good living and so on, relate this to the concept of Elul, because Parsha Shoftim, of course, is the Parsha we always read during Elul. That's what it is, right? Shoftim is always read during Elul. And early on in Elul, this year, very early on, it's the second of Elul, it'll be read on Shabbos, but it's already, we're studying the Parsha already, right? So the idea is that the month of Elul, of course, is what we call the Chodesh HaCheshbon. It's the month of reflection. And part of that reflection is part of that true inventory that we take of where we are and the commitment we're going to take for the next year. Part of that Cheshbon is how well do we regulate our gates? How well do we legislate what comes in and what goes out in the various entry points in the body, the eyes, the ears, the nostrils, the mouth, and so on. And that's very much an integral part of the Elul journey and the Elul process. Okay. So that's just a little bit of an introduction in terms of connecting with Elul. Now, what I really want to do today is to go into the Parsha, the portion that deals with the mitzvah of appointing a king. So let's learn it through together, and then we're going to break it down, and I'm going to share with you a group of different insights. So the parasha in this week's parasha reads the following. It says like this: Kisovay el haaretz, when you come to the land asher Hashem alekecha noisen lecha and loisen lach, Hashem your God is giving you, yirishta v'yashavta bo, you're going to inherit the land, you're going to settle the land, ve'omart, and then you're going to say, asima olai melech, let me place on me a king, k'chol agoyim asher sivoysa, like the countries around me. Says the Torah. Yes, there's a mitzvah. Soim tosim alecha melech. You should put upon yourself a king. Asher yifchar Hashem alekecha boy, that Hashem will choose. Mikerev achecha tosim alecha melech. First of all, the king needs to be one of you. He needs to have certain lineage. He needs to come from Jewish people and so on. Loisucha loseis alecha ishnachar. You're not permitted to put a stranger upon you. Asher leachichu, that he's not one of your kinsmen. He's not one of your brothers. But you should appoint a king. Then he says, Rak lo yarbe lo isusim. There's a certain mitzvah the king has to have. A king has to be very focused. He should not have too many horses. The Gemara discusses what all this means in practical terms, but if a king is not allowed to own, his horse stock shouldn't be that many. Well, Yoshiva Om Mitzrayim said he shouldn't take the nation back to Egypt, because apparently Egypt was the source of horse trade. So if a king has too many horses, he might take the people back to Egypt. Leman harbo isus. If he has too many horses, Vahashem Omar Lachem, and Hashem has said to you, that you should not return on that path, which you're not supposed to go back to Egypt. By the way, this is a separate mitzvah. It's mentioned a few times in the Torah, but not going back to Egypt. And this is a fascinating shir, and discussion in its own right about how come people did live in Egypt, the Jews lived in Egypt, the Rambam himself lived in Egypt, and so on and so forth. But that's not for today. I just wanted to mention it. Okay. So one of the things that a king's allowed to have is too many horses. But he's not allowed to marry too many wives. Of course, that was the day that polygamy, and particularly with kings, was common. There needs to be a limit on the king. He needs to make sure he doesn't have too much physical, financial resources, because that could take him away, could distract him. So those are the things the king is not allowed to do. Then the Torah says, when the king sits on his throne, then he has a special mitzvah. What's the special mitzvah? He shall have a copy of the Sefer Torah, written for him on a scroll by the Levim and by the Kohanim. Now, just to point out, this is an interesting mitzvah that's specific to a king, meaning, you know, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to have a Sefer Torah in generally, to own a Sefer Torah. Very big discussion about why nowadays not everyone does it. There was a famous Rosh, and the Rosh says that the purpose of it is to learn. Nowadays, we fulfill this mitzvah by having Jewish books in the home, by having Svarim. Nevertheless, those that are able to and those that do, always it's a huge mitzvah for someone to be able to have write a Sefer Torah or have a Sefer Torah written for them. When a king comes along and he sits on the throne, he has to write a second Sefer Torah. And by the way, that second Sefer Torah is a small Sefer Torah that he has to carry around with him all the time. The first Sefer Torah could be at home, but the second Sefer Torah must be with him all the time. It was a small Sefer Torah. The Hoya Imai will be with him, the Korobo Yechol Yechayev, and he'll read it all the days of his life. L'man Yilma, that he should learn, the Yiras Hashem Alekov, to fear Hashem, his God. Lishmoiris Kol Divrei HaTorah HaZois, to keep the whole Torah, V'sachukim El HaZoisim, and all these laws. What's the point of this? He says, L'man Rum Levavoi, that he will not become haughty, he shouldn't become arrogant over his brethren Me'echav, Ulevilti Surman HaMitzvah, and he should not deviate from the mitzvah, Yomin Usmoil, right or left. And if he does this, L'man Yarich Yomun Amamlachtoi, he will have longevity in his reign, who born of him and his children, Mekerev Yisrael, amongst the Jewish people. Okay. So that's the mitzvah of making a king. Now, we're going to go through many things over here. First of all, there's the famous question that all the Mefarshim ask. From our parsha, it seems that it's a mitzvah to appoint a king. Indeed, the Rambam says that when the Jewish people came into Egypt, they were commanded with three mitzvahs. One is to appoint a king. The second is to destroy Amalek, and the third is to build a Beis Hamikdash. Actually, in that order. So the first king of the Eden had was Shaul HaMelech. Subsequent to that was the war against Amalek, which wasn't done properly, but it was done more or less at the time, because they left over one person and it wasn't completely done. And then Dovin HaMelech came and he built the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. However, we know, so, and it seems to be a mitzvah, and it's an obligation, the whole thing. We know that in Tanakh, in the book of Shmuel, there's the story about the first time a king was appointed. And there we learn that it was considered a bad thing if they wanted a king. So I'll give you a bit of context. So when the Jews came into Eretz Israel, there was no king. There was a leader, Yehoshua was the leader. After Yehoshua passed away, there was a period of time for a couple of hundred years where they had shoftim, they had judges, meaning they had like the chief judge. People that would teach Torah, people that would lead them, advise them, but not someone who led them in a king structure, in a monarch structure, where the person was totally in control and sort of a fought wars and did what he needed to do and so on and so forth. There was just a much more of an informal sort of leadership position that people came and went in terms of their lead, like Shmuel and Yiftach and Shimshon, all these people. They helped the Jews in their war, but it was not a sovereign structure. It wasn't a monarchy as such. So we read a story. I'm going to read it through with you. Look at this. This is number three. This is in the book of Shmuel. Vayiskaptzu kol ziknei Yisrael, and all the elders of the Jewish people gathered together. Vayovoyu el Shmuel, they came to Shmuel. Shmuel was the last one of the shoftim, of the judges. He was also a Navi, he was a prophet. Haramasa, they came to him in a place called Ramah. Vayoyimru elav, and they said to him, Inei ato zakanta, you are elderly. Uvanecha leholchu bedrachecha, your sons have not really followed your ways completely. Therefore, ato now, simba lonu melech, appoint a king for us. lishvateinu, the shofteinu, to be our leader, to be our judge, to govern us, k'chol ha'goyim, like all the other nations. Says the pasuk, v'yeira hadovra be'enei Shmuel. Shmuel was displeased by this. Kasher Omru, when the Jewish people said, T'nolonu melech, give us a king l'shofteinu, and therefore v'yispalel Shmuel el Hashem, and God, and Shmuel davened to God, what should he do? And I don't copy the rest, but God responds to Shmuel and says, don't worry, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. Hashem is also displeased. So all the Mefarshim ask a question, what is going on here? Why is it good to want a king like the other nations? Is it not good to want a king? From our parsha, it seems that we have a mitzvah called mitzvah minui melech. It's a mitzvah to appoint a king, which seems like a good thing. But then we have over here in Shmuel, when they asked for a king, it was considered bad. Then, of course, Hashem responded. He said, if you want a king, no problem, I'll give you a king. And he told Shmuel to go and anoint Shaul, Saul, the first king of the Jewish people, to go and anoint him, and he should become the king. So what's going on? It's good or it's not good? I'll just share with you a couple of ideas. This is one of the interpretations that I once saw, and that it takes it a very, very simple thing. Not every mitzvah in the Torah means it's a good thing. Mitzvahs are sometimes, meaning what I mean by that is as follows. Not, of course, the mitzvah is always a good thing. But not every outcome, not every experience or circumstance that the Torah is addressing with the mitzvah means a good thing. And he gives a typical example. One of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah is the laws of divorce. Now, is divorce a good thing? It's sometimes a necessary thing. But it's always a sad thing, right? Yet there's a mitzvah. What does that mean? So there's a mitzvah. If in a circumstance where there needs to take place that particular experience, like divorce, so Torah gives us a mitzvah, how it needs to be done. The same thing over here. We could say this simply. We could make the differentiation very simply. Asking for a king to emulate the other nations is not a good thing. But if you want a king, this is how you have to do it. So what happened in Shmuel wasn't a good thing, but the Torah responds. And the Torah in our parasha says, if you want a king, I'm not really pleased with it, but if you want a king, this is the way it needs to be done. Okay, that's one particular thing. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh, the great commentator on the Torah, Reb Chaim ben Attar, he says the answer to the question is very simple. There's two types of kings. There's a king that some nations have, which is there just to strengthen the power of that nation and to dominate other nations through warfare, through land possession, whatever the case might be. That's a very, in those times particularly, that was a very typical manifestation of kingship. Then there's another king, another form of a king. The form of a king is someone to rule and to help improve his nation, to teach them, to advise them, to even enforce the law, but to bring them closer to Hashem. So he says that when they asked for a king in the Shmuel story, and they said, give us a king like all the other nations, they were asking for a king to be like the other nations, to flex their muscles and expand their domination over other nations. That wasn't a good thing. Hashem says, but we will give you a king, and a king will be the way a king should operate. The way a king is spoken about in our parsha, which is the idea to be committed to Hashem, to surrender to Hashem, and to help the Jewish people serve Hashem, to bring them along the pathway of being a strong nation internally, both physically and, of course, spiritually as well, to actually serve Hashem properly. That's the Orach Chaim's interpretation. There's a very fascinating Kliyoker on this. Kliyoker asks the question, and he says, this is his view. And he says something very interesting, and I think it's a lesson for all of us. He says, in our parsha, we need to compare the language. He says like this, look. Our parsha says, if you'll go into the land of Israel, and you'll say, Asimo olai, place upon me a king. What does it say in Shmuel? They came to Shmuel and they said, Simo lonu, give us, appoint for us. They don't say, Sima aleinu, put upon us. They say, give to us. Very different. He says the following. The mitzvah of appointing a king in our parsha, presumably when it's a good king and a king that Hashem has chosen, and a king that is following in the footsteps of Hashem, a king, a leader of a nation, is someone that the nation has chosen, or Hashem has chosen, and they've committed to him, they become subjugated to him, they surrender to his authority, they accept his authority. That's what the mitzvah of appointing a king is. Someone who will govern you, and someone who will accept their authority. In the Torah, accepting authority is a very important thing. When it came to Shmuel, however, it's a different type of king. They didn't say, give upon us, place a king upon us. They said, give us a king. Us a king means, he says, those are the people that seek leadership to be a rubber stamp for them, to enforce what they want to be enforced, to make decrees and give instructions and lead the way they tell him to lead. That's not the king that Hashem wants you to appoint. And he has, I'm going to share this with you because it's really funny. He says, Ukaminag, I'm going to read it to you. He says, I didn't copy it, but let me read it to you. He says, not only a king, he says, Ukaminag artsois elu. He says, this is what he said in his time. The Kliyaka lived about 400 years ago. He says, like the custom of these lands, Shemekabalim ezerav, that they appoint like a sort of a rabbi, Alzman Yordua, for a certain amount of time. Not because they should respect him and follow his authority. The other rabbi, on the contrary, the way they do it is a mosam al rav. Their fear, their authority is over the rabbi. The al kain, therefore, who mukrach, it's necessary for him lahachnif lohem, to flatter them, to be on their good side, kadei shelo yitchu, in order that they shouldn't fire him. He says, that's not leadership. A true leader of a community is someone that can lead strongly, that is not governed and not defined by the perception of people, that doesn't have to read a popularity race because he's under the authority of the other people. Right? Now, he's talking, obviously, and we'll see in a second, he's talking from the perspective of the people who appoint the leader, not from the perspective of the leader himself or herself. The leader himself, of course, has to be humble. The leader has to earn the respect. The leader has to care deeply and understand that really, at the end of the day, he is working for the people, meaning he's working for their benefit. But if he's in the position of authority, he has to be free and be able to exert that authority and make decisions that are good for the people, even if he's not popular. He has to be able to make decisions even when it's not a popular thing to do. Now, the leader's responsibility to do that properly is something the Torah talks about soon, that the king has to be humble and has to be completely committed to Hashem and so on. We'll talk about that in a moment. But this is the interesting concept of the Rambam and of the Kliyokar. And he says, therefore, that's the difference. It's the answer to this dilemma is in the words. In Shmuel, they said, here we are. In Shmuel, they said, Simulanu, give us, not upon us, give us. We'll govern him. But in the Torah, it says, Asima, here we are. Asima alai, place upon me. I'm ready to accept authority. Now, this is a very, very important concept, by the way. It goes back to each individual, everyone. The concept of what it says in Pirkei Avos, Asei lechorav, make for yourself a mentor, right? Now, it's interesting, if you look at the words in Pirkei Avos, it says, Asei lechorav, make for yourself a mentor. Now, what is the definition of that mentor? So on one hand, of course, the mentor, of course, no one's going to accept, appoint anyone. You've got to appoint someone that you can relate to. You've got to appoint someone that you respect. Someone that is just not you, so he's objective, not subjective. Someone who you respect their opinion. However, it says, of course, that's got to be the kind of person, someone that you can have a connection with. But it says, asay, make for yourself a mentor. It doesn't say appoint for yourself a mentor or find a mentor. It uses specifically the word to make, asay. Now, in the Gemara, we have this expression of asay to mean something else, not just to make. It means to force. For example, I'll give you just an example. There's a sentence in the Gemara where it talks about how a community needs to enforce a law, a tax of generosity, of charity. And it says, ma'asin ala tzedakah. You can even force people who live in a community, if the structure of the community is that people have control, force them to give a certain amount of money towards tzedakah, for welfare, to keep people alive, and so on and so forth. But the word is ma'asin, which means to force. So when the Pirkei Avos says, asay l'chara, make for yourself a mentor, which means accept upon yourself someone who you're going to trust, and you're going to ask questions to, and you're going to seek advice to, yes, with communication and talking and discussion, but ultimately you're going to accept their advice, you're going to accept their decision. Because otherwise, what's the point? Just having someone who is going to tell you what you want them to hear? You know, I once heard a joke that today with technology, you know, they have a computer question where you can put in questions and get sort of halachic answers, and then, right? So someone told me a joke once, they wanted to devise a computer program that you put a halachic question into it, and it gives you which rabbi you should ask to get the most lenient opinion. Now, it's a joke and it's not a joke. It's a joke because hopefully people don't do this, but it's not a joke because actually people do this sometimes. There's no computer program like that, but there is the concept where people go shopping. Rabbi shopping, leader shopping, mentor shopping, because they go shopping until they get someone that will tell them what they want to hear. And that's not, it's missing the whole point. That's about finding so you can feel good and say, well, I did discuss it and this is the answer. No. Part of discussing it with someone else, whether it's an emotional issue, whether it's an advice issue, whether it's a halachic issue, is to discuss it with someone, you know, who you prefer to listen to. And I think it's a really, really important thing. And everyone has to have this. I mean, I always tell you, I only tell you stories that work. Just a few weeks, at the beginning of this lockdown, there was an interesting question that came up. I'll just tell you, right? It's an interesting question about, because the lockdown was going to start on the middle of the night on Friday night, and there was a suggestion paper to do the Torah reading on Friday night. Some opinions hold you can do that. So I didn't know if it was a good thing, a bad thing, we should do it, we shouldn't do it. So it was a halachic question, a bit of a policy question, should you do something that's a bit strange? And so on. So I have a rabbi I have a couple of rabbis, but I have one particular one that I ask question to, and he's the most accessible one, a very knowledgeable person. He's like a specialist. I always tell people that ask me, you have a rabbi? I say, of course, I'm a GP, I'm not a specialist. Sometimes you have to go to a specialist, right? So I asked him, and he said exactly the opposite of what I wanted to do. I'm not going into the whole discussion now. And you got to listen. You ask, you got to listen. So that's what the Kliyakar is saying, and it's something we all need to understand, because sometimes we ask people questions, but we try to sort of manipulate the answer, and that's not a good idea. So the Torah is telling us, Asimu Allah, we've got to place that authority upon us, not into our hands, not that we can manipulate it, but rather that we can follow it and surrender to it. Okay, now, that's from the perspective of the person appointing leadership. When does that work? It works if the leader is a good leader. So in the same mitzvah where the Torah tells us we have to appoint a king, the Torah is very specific how the king has to operate. Right? And therefore, we have this very interesting, first of all, not what they can't do. They can't be immersed in material gain, in horses and so on and so forth. That's to keep him focused. And then also what he should do. And here's the amazing thing, right? Because a king is someone with incredible control. The halachics of a king is allowed to do whatever he wants. But in Jewish kingship, in Jewish sovereignty, the king cannot do whatever he wants because he's totally and absolutely bound by the Torah. Right? That's the difference between the monarchy in the Jewish sense and the monarchy in a different sense. Totally bound by not just a constitution, but a divine constitution, which is the Torah. And when the greater the leadership is, the more important this becomes. And therefore, the Torah has this mitzvah and says that when he ascends the throne, he has to write a second Sefer Torah, carry it with him all the time, so he never forgets, so that lest he become arrogant. I'll just tell you a couple of interesting things. The Mefarshim explain, the Ateris, the Rosh Tzaddik, says that the whole purpose of the second Sefer Torah is to prevent ego, is to prevent arrogance. Because they ask a question, you know, if the Torah wants to tell the king to constantly look at his Torah scroll, if the Torah wants to tell the king to walk around with the Torah, why does he need a second Torah? What's wrong with the first Torah? If he already has a Torah, why can't he just walk around with that one? Okay, you want the king to be more involved with his Torah scroll, more than other people, tell him to have it next to him all the time. But why does he need to write a second Torah? So that Ateres L'Rosh Tzadik says a beautiful thing. He says, because there's nothing more dangerous than arrogance. And there's an arrogance is specifically a problem when someone is doing everything else right. He says that the Chovas Halavavos, a great master of ethics, writes. He says that there was a wise man that said to his disciples, and he says, "If I knew that you guys were perfect, and I knew that you were free from all transgression and all sin, I would be afraid of the greatest of all sins for you, and that is the sin of ego, the sin of arrogance." And that's why the Torah says he's going to write two Torahs. Yes, a king has to have two Torahs, because the greater the power, the greater the threat of arrogance, the greater the danger of arrogance. And therefore the Torah says he has to have two Torah scrolls, because the first Torah scroll is to remind him just to keep the mitzvahs, to remind him that God is the one who tells us what to do, and he's bound by the values, the mitzvahs and the obligations and the responsibilities, the way they laid out in the Torah. That's the first Sefer Torah. And he has to look at that and learn it. The second Sefer Torah is to carry around with him the whole time, not to teach him the mitzvahs. The first Torah teaches him the mitzvahs. The second Sefer Torah is to guard him from arrogance. That's what the second Sefer Torah is about. And the Chasam Sofer says an amazing thing. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin which talks about Avodah Zorah, idol worship. Right? Idol worship. And the Gemara says over there that when the Torah talks about idol worship, it always talks about going away from the things that I've commanded you. And therefore the Gemara says that the word tzav, the word to command, is always a hint, stay away from idol worship. So the word tzav is a symbol of idol worship. That's what the word tzav is, tzadik vav. But we know that when we keep Hashem's commandments, we call it a mitzvah. So what's a mitzvah? Look at what the pasuk says. Pasuk says this one over here that I've just highlighted, right? The Torah says that the king has to have a second Torah because that he should not become arrogant, he should not feel superior to his friends, his brothers, and he should not deviate from the mitzvah right or left. He says, what does it mean, not deviate from the mitzvah right or left? So he says, take the word mitzvah. So the word mitzvah means a beautiful thing, right? One of Hashem's commandments. In the middle of that mitzvah, there's the word tzav. Tzav means avodah zarah, idol worship. But we know, by the way, we know that idol worship is synonymous with arrogance. The Torah, the Gemara says, we've done this many times, that if someone loses their temper, that's normally a sign of arrogance, and that's like idol worship, because you're taking yourself too seriously, you're serving yourself. So the pasuk says, in the middle of the word mitzvah, it's tzadik vav. What's on either side of the mitzvah? Mem and hey. Mem and hey means ma. What is this? We know that it's written in many, many sources that the concept of mem and hey is the symbol of humility. It says in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu says, v'nachnu mo, what are we? Mem hey, what are we? We're nothing. We're humble in the face of Hashem. Says the pasuk, so beautiful this. Says the pasuk, the king needs a second Sefer Torah, that he should not deviate from the mitzvah. Yamin usmol, the right and the left, the mem and the hey, on either side of the mitzvah. And if he does, he'll be left with tzadik vav, he'll be left with tzav, and that's idol worship. And we know that in Jewish history there were kings. They were corrupted. There were kings that brought the Jewish people in the time of the temple to idol worship, to pagan worship. Why? Because they lacked humility. They took the power corrupted them. So, and therefore they were sur min ha-mitzvah. They deviated from the mitzvah, right and left. They dropped the mem and they dropped the hey, they dropped the ma, they dropped the humility, and they got left with tzav, which is the concept of Avodah Zarah. So therefore Hashem is telling the king, you have to have one Sefer Torah that reminds you of all the mitzvahs, but you got a second one that reminds you that the mitzvah shouldn't be corrupted, because if you take a mitzvah and you take away the mem and the hey and you become arrogant, you lead to idol worship. So here's an amazing partnership. In other words, there's the responsibility of the one following the leader or one appointed the leader, and the responsibility of the leader. Unfortunately, often we find that the roles are switched. It's the leader that's trying to grab power, and it's the one following the leader that's trying to manipulate the leader to work for him instead of being surrendering to their authority. If everyone will do their job, it will be much better, right? So therefore, the person appointing leadership has to be a person who's ready to submit to authority. And this can be on many various different levels, down to the concept of having our own rabbi, our own mentor, our own advisor, whatever the case is. But the leader has to remember it's only going to work if the leader is incredibly humble. If the leader remembers that they actually work for the people, that they're there to assist the people. And to engage with the people, and to lift up the people, and to inspire the people. Then they can earn that respect and earn that authority, and do it with humility and lack of arrogance. Then the partnership actually works. Now, that sort of ties in as a protection to understand the role of a king. And I'm going to go back to the concept of a king, the way it was in olden times, to understand the system of a king. Because we know throughout Jewish history, I mean, when I say system of a king, Moshe Rabbeinu was considered a king. At the end of the day, we've just learned that appointing a king is a good thing. Now, we don't have kings today. But we will have a king, because Mashiach will come, and Mashiach will be a king. That's exactly what Mashiach will be. We'll have the mitzvah again of having a king. When we look at, when we think of kings, we think of it a very archaic thing. We think of it as a power-grabbing concept. We think of all the corruption that took place with kings throughout all the history. The murder, the carnage, everything, all the things happened. And perhaps, of course, that did happen. But we need to understand, in the true Jewish sense, the role of a king and how it's supposed to work. I'm going to share with you an idea, in conclusion, an idea from one of the talks of the Rebbe. On this week's parsha, he explains the concept of a king and the concept of the various roles that exist in Jewish history. So he starts off by talking about a Rambam, that the Rambam says, here it is, number four. The Rambam, it's a place that he's talking about kings, and he says, Shaliboy, the heart of the king, leiv kol kahal Yisrael. So he makes reference to this imagery that the king is like the heart of the people, the heart of the Jewish nation. And the Rebbe in his talk asks a question. He says, a very interesting terminology to use. And he suggests, he challenges us, and he says, why do we refer to the king as the heart of the people? Why do we refer to the king as the Rosh, the head of the people? We know that in the body, of course, the head and the heart are both vital organs, but at the end of the day, it's the head that controls. It's the head that dictates. It's the head that sends the signals. Yes, it's the heart that spreads energy and life and blood to all the vessels and all the limbs, but it's subservient to the head. So why do we have this terminology where we call the king the heart of the people rather than calling the king the head of the people? And what he does is he goes into an entire discourse. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I'm just going to touch on the point. He talks about two terms that are used in the Torah. One is melech, a king. One is a nosi, a leader. Now, it so happens, for example, that this is unusual, but by Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, he was both a king and a leader. And they're different, as we'll soon see. Mashiach will be the same way. Mashiach will be a king and a nosi, a king and a leader. Now, throughout Jewish history, the structure most times was not like that. The structure was that the king was a king, and the leader, the word Nosi, was normally a reference to the leader of the Sanhedrin. So you had always a central Sanhedrin. You have many, many bastions, as it's described in this week's parasha, but then you have a central bastion, the Supreme Court, so to speak, which was the legislative body of the Jewish people, the people who were entrusted with the mission of interpreting Torah Sheba'al Peh, the Oral Torah, and they were the people to define what is the halacha. And sometimes there was different opinions, they had to vote, they were big tzaddikim, big talmidei chachamim, and then they would resolve it by going to the point of majority, as the Torah wants them to do, and that would be the the system of halacha, and each Sanhedrin was run by a nasi, by a leader of a Sanhedrin. So he says the following. The Gemara says, when it comes to a heart, the Gemara says the heart is one of the weakest organs. We know this. I mean, a lot of times, you know, we have to do a lot to protect our hearts, right? Heart trouble can be quite common because the heart is actually a weak organ. Yet it is the vital organ. It's what provides life for the entire body. Oxygen, blood, and so on. It says the interesting thing that a king, on the one hand, going back into the halachas, the structure of how a king works together with the nasi, the leader of the Sanhedrin. A king is someone who has unbelievable power, number one, in terms of fighting wars, in terms of providing for the people. And a king's role, in fact, throughout Jewish history, was exactly that. A king's role was to run the country, fight the wars, run the economy, and make sure everything is functional. And the king had free reign and had an unbelievable authority of how to do stuff. The king was all, part of the king's power was that the king had resources from the nation to his disposal. Whatever he wanted. Whatever he wanted had to be provided to the king by the taxpayers' money. That's what it was. That was the king. That was the structure of a king. The Nasi, on the other hand, the leader of the Sanhedrin, did not run the country. But the Nasi's function was to interpret halacha, to interpret the law. Sometimes to even rule if a war that the king wanted to run was halachically correct or not. And so on. Different things. The Nasi, as all public servants, would draw a salary from the public accounts, but would not have everything as disposable. He was far removed from the nation. So he says, this is the idea of why the king is called the heart, and the Nasi is the one called the head. The heart is an interesting organ. The heart actually is much more engaged with the organs of the body than the head is. The head runs the body, but is somewhat detached from the body. The heart is always moving. The heart is pumping blood and receiving blood from all different parts of the body all the time. In other words, the heart runs the body, has all the resources of the body, but actually the heart is the weakest limb because the heart is just working for the people. The king works for the people, and the king is engaged with the people. That's why it's a function of a heart. But of course, our heart cannot exist without a head. A head is that detached body, the Sanhedrin, the Nasi. The Nasi was not engaged with the people by design. Because the Nasi's function together with the Sanhedrin was to provide the truth for the people. Not to know what the people wanted. It wasn't to implement the law. Not to educate and inspire each individual. The Nasi was there to provide what is Hashem's will. There's a question in halacha, without knowing what you think and what you feel, what is the law? What is Hashem's will? What is the truth? That's why the Nasi is called the head and the king is called the heart. Now, in times of a proper king and a proper Nasi, this partnership was critical. The king had ultimate authority, but yet had to be engaged with everyone. He had complete control, but yet he had no control. He was working for the people. He had to make sure that the country runs properly. Part of running the country properly is to understand the people, to relate to the people, to respect the people, to know what the people need and what will make them successful, what will make them function, what will make the economy work, and so on and so forth. So his role was engaging, interacting with the people. That's why he was a heart. But that heart function could only work if he remained humble. How does he remain humble? Because he's also got to relate to the ultimate truth, the truth in its pure form. And that's the Sanhedrin, that's the Nasi that he had to always consult with. That was the body that dictated what the Torah is, and the king was completely subservient to the Torah, and therefore to the Nasi. To follow the truth of Torah, his job was, how do we implement this successfully? His job was not to create the truth, his job was to bring the truth to the people. Similar to a heart and a brain. The brain sends the signals, the heart sends the signals to the body. And the truth is, it's not just a nice theory, but it's the way we're supposed to function as well. Because our layers of behavior, our layers of human experience, as we've talked about many times, is the head, we think, we feel, and then we act. And that partnership is incredibly important. Because there has to be a part of us that is detached from what is going on around us. Because there has to be a part of us that can be objective, where we can learn, where we can step back, we can think, and we can engage and absorb the pure truth. The pure truth. And that truth doesn't change. The truth of the Torah is eternal. What does sometimes not change, but sometimes is implemented differently, is certain things are implemented depending on the situation, when Torah allows that to be happen. So then there's the heart. So when we're in a relationship, or we're about to respond to something that's happening around us, or we're about to inspire others or inspire ourselves, the first thing is, what is the truth? What is the goal? What is the undiluted pure truth? That's the head, the nosi. Then we need to know, what's the heart say? What's the heart that's engaging, that's not detached, that's engaging in a subjective form? What does the heart tell us? What is the heart feeling? What is the heart understanding and processing in this situation? That's an important part. And then the heart has to work together with the head to implement the behavior in an effective way. And that might look different from one person to the next. The way I implement, obviously we all have to keep the same mitzvahs and so on, the halacha is the halacha, but nevertheless, there's a different way that we talk to people, different stages of growth, different things that we do at different times, and so on and so forth. So the heart has to, each of us will have the same foundation. Each of us will have the same undiluted truth, the same head, the same nasi. But our heart will be engaging with our situation and will dictate a little bit of a different interpretation. Not interpretation, but implementation in consultation with the nasi, in consultation with the head for the pure truth and the intellectual purity. And I think this goes back to the whole process of the month of Elul as well. The month of Elul is also about making a cheshbon. And the month of Elul is about thinking about things and actually having a look at our value system, having a look at our truth, having a look at our nosi, at our leader, right? Maybe we're not up to doing certain things. Maybe there's certain things that we cannot take on from this year, but it's still a good thing to know, what is the ultimate goal? What is the truth? What is the undiluted truth? Then we need to bring in our heart. How are we feeling? How are we engaged with what is happening within our world? What is actually happening on the ground? And then the consultation between the head and the heart have to then bring to better behavior and improve behavior. But we need to bring in the head, because the head is detached and it's objective and can offer the truth. So this idea of the role of the melech and the role of the nasi is something which can apply to us as well, particularly in the month of Elul. Okay, I think that's it for today.